1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. Joe at rt.ie is the email, and this is the last paragraph of an email we got in this morning about an event last night. Music in Ireland really is in crisis. The lack of respect Ireland has for musicians and performers is chronic. Roy Keane once said that Irish people were only interested in coming along to things for the sing-song. Well, they don't even do that anymore. It's such a contrast playing somewhere like Germany, where you're actually shown some respect when you perform. Gary O'Neill on. Gary, good afternoon.
How's it going, Joe? What's the story, brother?
Good, thanks. And the gig you were talking about is what?
I went to see Christy Dignam and Joe Jill perform what was supposed to be an evening of kind of songs from Christy's life,
yeah,
and his inspirations and such that he's gone through over the years.
An intimate gig, as they call it.
That's right, yeah. It was kind of like half storytelling, half kind of performance kind of thing.
And where was this on?
It was at Boomer's Bar in Clondalkin.
A popular venue and a regular venue. Okay. And are you from Clondalkin?
I am indeed, yeah, just around the corner there from the venue.
And your opening paragraph is equally as forceful as your closing one. I spend my whole life talking about how proud I am to be from Clondalkin. Tonight was one of the few nights I was ashamed to be from Clondalkin. Why, Gary?
I just thought the lack of respect shown to Christy on the stage was absolutely deplorable. And, you know, it's not strictly a reflection on the people of Clondalkin, as we have gigs here all the time. Mm-hmm. We had Damien Dempsey come and play the Irish Cronon in Clondalkin there a couple of weeks ago. Fantastic gig, everyone hung on every word. But it's just, I've never seen a lack of respect for a performer like what I saw for Christy last night.
And tell us, well, take us through the performance. How did that show itself?
Just every single song the man tried to tell you. Christy, I don't want to give away too many of the stories because they're touring this about the place and that's kind of the draw. But he's telling stories about his life and quite poignant moments, mm-hmm, of kind of milestones in his own life. And during every single song, after every song, he was having to ask people to be quiet. He was having to stop. Every story was getting cut short after one or two sentences just because he couldn't get them out because people wouldn't shut up basically and listen to the man.
And if anyone who read Christy's book, I don't know whether you read it or not, Gary, that is full of deeply moving but deeply upsetting stories.
Absolutely.
Of his heroin addiction,
suicidal thoughts, everything.
Yes.
Yeah, so he's telling stories about those periods in his life. People just wouldn't listen, and it's kind of like, I remember...
But when you say, when you say they wouldn't listen, what were they doing?
Oh, they were talking, they were shouting, they were laughing. The man's talking about one point in the set where he's talking about a time he stood up on the Ballymun Flats and was dropping a coin to see how long it would take, and there's people roaring, laughing and shouting at each other over at the bar, you know, just over drinks and stuff like that. And, you know, you could barely hear the man as he gave a rendition of Raglan Rose that was absolutely fantastic. And mm-hmm, it would have been fantastic if you could actually hear it, because you couldn't hear a word the man was saying. Or the man was singing at that point. It's just, I just got ridiculous. It was horrible. It's kind of like the overarching thing you were looking at. It just feels like it's really indicative of the kind of the music scene around Ireland at the minute. It's just such a lack of respect for performers and for musicians. And I know I'm not alone in the fact that I would regard Christy Dignam as something of a national treasure.
Absolutely.
I think even just speaking technically as a vocalist, phenomenal.
Yeah.
He's a phenomenal vocalist. He's a charismatic individual. He's a hero of Dublin. And just the lack of respect. It was kind of flabbergasting to look at it there and just see people weren't bothered. It was like, that's what I was kind of getting at with the Roy Keane thing. He was talking about Euro 2012. People weren't interested in the football. Mm. They wanted to go for the sing-song. It just feels like nowadays they're not even interested in the sing-song. They just want to go for a gargoyle and that's it. And it's just like, it was a ticketed event. So it's not as if it was in a pub where, you know, some people might not have been there. They might not have been interested in Christy Dignam. It was a ticketed event that everyone was there for, but it was hard to watch. It was a bit cringy at times. You're watching through your hands and just no one will shut up.
Were you mortified for Christy?
I wasn't mortified for Christy. I was mortified for the punters.
It's not the crowd that were misbehaving.
In fairness to Boomers, they put up posts on the social media and everything like that, said what kind of gig it was, said it was intimate. Every table had a kind of a printout on it explaining what the gig was, but people, they weren't bothered.
And what did the printout say?
I can't remember the exact word, but it was something along the lines of, this is a show an intimate show. The stories of Christie's life, his inspirations, and just asking people to show a bit of respect.
Okay, well, now you're onto something there, because it is unusual, first of all, to put a leaflet on a table before a gig. But you're saying the sting of that leaflet was telling people what type of event it was, and it's Christie talking about his life and ups and downs and warts and all, brutally honest as always. So they put a leaflet on the so they might have been worried beforehand, were they, that it was going to be noisy?
It's possible. Yeah, it's possible. Like acts the calibre of Christie and that, they don't play there very often. You know, you do have people in and out all the time, but I'm not sure. That's something I've heard of before, but they felt the need to do it. And, you know, in fairness to people, like, there was a lot of people there who were very interested in Christie and gave the gig everything and were singing along and were listening and were up singing and dancing at the right moments kind of thing. But it was just ruined by, like, Lou Drummond, who had no interest whatsoever.
Did anyone check them? Did anyone say, lads?
Oh, of course, yeah, yeah, you know, absolutely. After every song, you knew it was coming, as you'd have to wait 30 seconds for everyone to have a natter and Christie to ask for a bit of quiet and respect, and then the crowd having to go, shut up, and all this kind of crack. So, yeah, every song.
And you mentioned Christie's attributes, which are legion and legendary. You didn't mention, I know you would, he's a gentleman.
Oh, he absolutely is.
Did he say anything?
He did, yeah. He was up on the stage. He asked for a bit of respect. He got very annoyed at one point in the gig. It was horrible. You know, you don't want to kind of blow out of proportion and say what it was and what it wasn't. But it got to the point where this man, he's been doing it longer than I've been alive, where he had to stop the gig and actually have a go with someone and say, listen, will you just get out? He says, I've been to the amount of gigs I've been to over the years. If I don't like the singer, I just leave. Get out. And eventually the person went off then and they left.
Oh, Christie said that to somebody from the stage?
Oh, yeah, from the stage,
sorry,
absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
It was that bad.
We were on to Boomers. They said you were grossly exaggerating.
Did they?
Yes.
Okay.
There was no problem.
Okay. They would say that, though, wouldn't they?
Well, I don't. Well, that doesn't negate it.
It doesn't negate it, but in fairness to Boomers, it's not really their fault. They can't control who turns up. It was a ticket event. Everyone there was over 18. They got in and Boomers, you know, they put out the calls for respect and all that. So they did it from their end of things. It's not their fault.
They did say one person was asked to leave. Well, that was the person Christie asked to leave.
That's right.
So Christie was not only the performer. I know Joe is his right-hand man from Aslan.
Yeah.
Christie wasn't just a performer, in many cases the songwriter and the storyteller. He was also the bouncer.
He was giving people the hoosh from the stage, yeah.
Oh, God. Mike Hanrahan, 51551. Ladies and gentlemen, you hear Mike Hanrahan every day on Liveline, believe it or not, because he's in Stockton's Wing and he wrote the Liveline Sig tune, which is as follows. We can hear the Liveline Sig tune again, can we, for 2 seconds?
1850, yeah. 715, 815.
Do you remember writing it, Mike?
Oh, I do remember it. That was about 1985, 86, from an album called Full Flight. We had a great time.
I wasn't
great
even
recording that, yeah.
I wasn't even born then. And it's called, what's it called again?
It's called Over the Moors to Meet Maggie.
Okay. Good afternoon. You're welcome to Over the Moors to Meet Maggie with Joe Duffy. Now, it doesn't have to ring to it, Mike. Okay, Mike, this is a serious topic, and especially the way... But I want to keep it in proportion. One, because Christie is such a creative force and a joy that he's brought to the country, like yourself and Stockton's Wing. But is it a problem, Mike? You contact us. You say it is.
It is. It can be a problem, and I think it's really down to, if it's a paying gig, then people are paying money in. So those people who come in to talk really should be respecting the people who have already paid money in to hear some music. And some of these listening gigs, the artists are putting their stories forward, like Christian. It's a very deep and well thought out, well-written story. So I think his story deserves a bit of respect, you know. And if people are shouting and talking, then you deal with them. I mean, I was taught by the master, Ronnie Drew, so I sat with Ronnie at many gigs, and he just took people out with a few words. What I tend to do is focus into the people who are talking, especially at a quiet gig, and try and put a bit of attention on them and make them a little uneasy, and sometimes you'd offer them their money back, you know, take your money and leave or something. So
You'd say that from the stage?
Oh, God, yeah, yeah. I mean, if people are annoying, because... Yeah. The amount of times you'd be on stage and you could ask somebody, could you please keep quiet? What invariably happens is the entire audience then clap and applaud because somebody has asked these one or two individuals to kind of keep quiet. So, and then again, you have the other side where if it's a non-paying gig, it's a non-paying gig is kind of free for all, really. You don't have any control over those.
Now, the story in your text here about the two women at the top table with their mobile phones.
Oh, yeah, that was a gig myself and Leslie Dowdle did out in Dunleary in the party. And these two ladies arrived up to the very front of the gig and had the mobile phones out for the first 20, 25 minutes. And of course, the light from the mobile phone, and it really does put you off. And then if you're introducing a song and telling a story or singing a really beautiful song, and particularly with Leslie, because her voice is so beautiful, it really puts you off. So I just decided to focus in on them as well and ask them, did they want their money back? And they were humming and hawing, and we asked them to share the story, maybe share some of the tweets they had with the rest of the audience. And of course, the more focus we put on them, they got more agitated and they did a decent thing and just walked out throwing horrible abuse at us or something. So it was a result.
And any other time? What was the time? Donald Kirk gig.
A Donald Kirk gig.
One table was so loud and raucous you couldn't hear Donald's cover of Into the Mystic, the Van Morrison piece. Did you put that in your car?
Well, I wasn't at that gig, but I find it really annoying at gigs. I remember being at a Leonard Cohen gig one night, and this guy came in beside me and started shouting and roaring and hissing. And I just turned to him and I said, "Excuse me," I said, "do you mind me asking your name?" And he gave me his name, and I said, "I actually don't see your name on the ticket."
Right.
I said, "I've paid a lot of money for this ticket."
Brilliant.
And it says Leonard Cohen. It doesn't say your name at all. And he got sick of me. But again, it was a result. He left.
Yeah. Well, the rows can start when people check each other at gigs saying, "Listen, I did come to see the name on the ticket, not you," and to hear the name on the ticket.
Yeah, I suppose you're tensing your arm, really.
But, Mike, is drink the problem?
Oh, not at all. I don't think the drink is there. It's an issue at some gigs, but definitely not. Some people just like to go and have a natter, you know. And they could pay up to 50 or 60 quid for a gig and they'd win and they'd just have a natter. And I don't know, it's just, I don't know what it is about people, but I tend to do really quiet gigs now, theatre gigs, and there's a kind of an unwritten rule in theatre where people kind of, they come in and sit down and listen to music, and if they enjoy it, they'll stay with you. If they don't, they have the opportunity to leave as well, you know.
Yeah. But people pay into a gig, so they know, as happened with Christy and Joe last night, Christy Ding. Mm. People pay into a gig, so they know they're going to a gig. It's not as if they're out with their buddies and suddenly someone gets up in the corner and starts singing over them.
Like, yeah, but it doesn't stop some people from who want to just chat, and they think they have the right to chat. Some people say, "I've paid in, I can do what I want." You know, it's really, I find it less and less with the listening gigs, with the theatre gigs. I'm doing a lovely gig tonight with Eleanor Shanley in a church. You'll hear a pin drop, you know.
Yeah.
So I could be somewhere else tomorrow night and you could hear people chattering. And it's up to the artist how important you feel your gig is, that you want to have quietness for your audience and for your music. And if you feel really strong about it, then it's, we have every right to say to people, you know, can you just calm it down a small bit?
But would artists be a little bit circumspect about saying it publicly? Listen, I did a gig last night and they were talking right through it, because that could be interpreted as a bit of reflection on your musicianship or whatever. You know what I mean? You're saying, actually, I did a gig yesterday. The audience turned off after 5 minutes. So you're kind of saying, God, am I brutal?
I wouldn't buy that. I'm at this for 40 years. So if I'm boring people now, then I must have been getting away with murder for 40 years. So.
By the way, where's that gig on with Eleanor tonight? I'm asking you. You didn't volunteer.
It's in St. Mary's Church in Mohill, part of the Mohill Festival.
Oh,
beautiful,
lovely.
Beautiful church.
Yeah. Beautiful main street there in Mohill and County.
Gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Great street. Say there, Mike. Gary.
Yes.
Did you raise the issue at the concert? Did you say anything to the manager of the Boomers? Or did you see Christy afterwards?
Christy, he was getting in and getting out. So I didn't think there was any point. I've been in that situation myself and people aren't listening to any. You just want to write it off and get out of there. Well, no, I didn't say it to the management of Boomers. No, there was enough people there, as you said earlier, checking people and saying, will you shut up and give a bit of wish? But no, there was no point in raising. What were the management going to do at that stage?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Do you stand up and say, listen, guys, please come again, but if you're
I really feel Bilmers are kind of caught in the middle of this, though, aren't they? They've facilitated a gig with a legendary songwriter. It's a big draw. It's a big name. Mm. And they've sold the tickets in good faith. It wasn't as if they were kind of sold under the counter to people. And you can't control who turns up, so it's not really Bilmers' fault either.
Yeah. Mike, sorry, can you insist at a gig that no alcohol be served during the performance? Can you?
We've never done it. Again, theatres tend to just have their bar outside.
Yeah, but generally,
no, we've never done it, no. And we've been asked sometimes, especially with Stockton's Wing. Well, with Stockton's Wing, we have power, so you can
you have
power
sound,
over it.
You've numbers.
You have the numbers and you have the sound. So it was never really an issue, unless we're singing slow songs. If we're singing slow songs with Stockton's Wing, I would always plead for a bit of silence. And you always get it, you know, so... But for a solo artist, Christy Moore used to do it all the time. He would get bars closed, and nobody had a problem with it. And I don't think why people should have it. If that's the artist, that's how they want to perform, then I think it's fair game.
Mike, you've performed abroad for those four decades. Compare and contrast the audience abroad to the audiences here, insofar as you can generalise.
Well, I know I'm a talent. I might be giving you the answer you're looking for, but I did that dreadful scene in Europe of the Irish bars for a couple of years, and they were worst gigs I've ever done in my life. What happened there? Yeah, but a friend of mine in Ganymede gave me a set of the original prototype inner ears way back in the 80s when they weren't kind of hip. So I used those, and I just switched off from the audience and just did my gig and got my money.
What do you call them, Mike? Inner ears.
All the actors have them now,
yeah.
Inner ear monitors.
Yeah,
and
great,
I remember doing a gig one time where somebody came up to me and said, what are you listening to with the ears? And I said, I'm listening to the match. And that kind of sent them off. So I think gigs are really, from a stage point of view, you deal with what's before you. And
okay.
I think if Christy wants silence for his story, Christy Dignam and Joe, then they deserve it because
they're
two of our greatest.
Absolutely. And Gary, how long did the show go on for last night, the intimate show, as you call
about maybe an hour, 45 minutes thereabouts.
And was there an interval or could people...
There was a small interval in the middle, yeah.
So people could have had a toilet break.
People could have had a toilet break and a pint and a chat if they wanted to.
Let me bring in Aisling O'Malley. Aisling, you were there last night as well.
Yeah, I just thought it was pretty really disrespectful the way that Christy was
but
treated.
But the management of Boomers told us Gary is totally exaggerating. They wouldn't come on, by the way, but they said he's totally exaggerating.
Well, I don't agree with that at all. I was there last night, and I actually thought that people were rowdy in the background. They were chatting over the songs he was singing, and he has a great history.
Yeah,
stories that he tells. So I thought it was very disrespectful.
And they were talking over, especially the stories.
Yeah, at the back. Okay. I mean, the people in front that stood up, especially for some of his, prolific songs. But there were people, being rowdy.
Okay, and how did it finish up in Boomers?
I actually left early because of the fact that I was disgusted with the way they were treated.
Sorry, you're breaking up. You left the gig early because of noise.
I left the gig early because of the way they were treating me. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So, say there, Aisling. Jerry Pierce from Ratgar, tell your story in full, Jerry.
Well, my story isn't about Boomers now.
Okay, I know that.
Story is about being in the Abbey Theatre one night.
Yes.
For a play that was heralded as one of the plays of the season.
Okay.
And the play of the year. And it had all the lovies in it.
Yeah.
Stephen Brennan,
great.
Brew, Derek Kelly, all the lovies were in it.
All the great actors, you mean?
The great actors of stage, screen and cinema. Don't forget cinema. And it was going fine in the second act. The next minute, a mobile phone went off. And the mobile phone just went off. And it went off. And it went off. And nobody seemed to know where it came from except the lady sitting beside me. It was her mobile phone. And she couldn't find the mobile phone, Joe. And she searched and she searched. And she literally went all over the place for the mobile phone. And then one of the stars of the stage just leaned over and said, would you turn off that fucking mobile phone?
Well, I didn't mean saying that fault, Jerry. Okay, okay.
Well, sorry, Joe, but I have to give it emphasis. But anyway, he said, turn off that effing mobile phone, would you? And he got a round of applause from the audience that was more than an ovation. And anyway, the lady was held up by the elbow She was so traumatic,
yes.
traumatized,
yes.
and she was led out of the auditorium by one of the bouncers.
Ah, the poor woman.
The poor woman was distraught and was her mobile phone, and as she was led out, it was still going off. So she couldn't find it, and I know the feeling well, Joe, but as I said,
I hate that sound.
There it is now.
If you want to ring me, this is Joe's phone. It's 1850-715-815. Thanks.
Oh, God almighty, Joe.
That's my mother.
Well, your mother, dear
she doesn't.
Dear.
She forgets I work her now. It's not Mabel, no.
She must have the dinner ready.
And the actor actually, and, okay.
I could say the actor now, but I won't
No.
But what happened was, as I said, the mobile phone was the lady's mobile phone, but it must have been stuck in her knicker or stuck somewhere in a very private place.
Okay,
but she couldn't turn it off, Joe.
Okay.
She couldn't entertain the idea of turning it off.
Okay.
And as I say...
Now, people get into a panic as well. It's dark and they... Oh, they're
mortified. It's awful, Joe.
They're mortified.
One of the worst things can never happen
to anybody. Did she come back in to the seat later?
No, she didn't come back in at all. And
okay.
she was obviously on her own because nobody went out after her.
And it's not as if punters at a show don't have enough warning about mobile phones these days. Jerry, okay, that's Jerry Pierce. Are you a bit of an actor yourself, Jerry?
Joe's done a few lines.
I'd say you have. Say you're a bit of a lovey yourself, as you call the lads.
Well,
and you
would, well, I know all the loveys, so I can call them that with reference to their affections.
Okay, and that performance, I won't ask you to do it again because I'd get away with it once in the programme. I didn't know it was coming. That performance of what the actor said from the stage to what the actor said to the bishop, so to speak, was pretty up there in terms of performance. Okay, Jerry Pearson, Rakar, Goramila, Marco, Jerry. Paul, good afternoon. It was Croke Park, 51551. What happened?
Good afternoon, Joe. Yeah. Just remind me, a couple of years back, I was at a Dublin semi-final. And obviously, you know, it's very difficult to get tickets. And I let a couple of people down, obviously trying to get tickets for the game. And there's a lady in front of me. And she had a bag at her feet at the match. So I didn't think anything of it. And then she proposed to take out a bag of wool. She started knitting a jumper for the duration of the match. And I was absolutely furious.
She was knitting?
She was knitting, yeah. Sorry, go on.
But can you not knit and weave and... throw while you're watching the match?
Well, I just think, you know, I know it's a separate issue, but I think you're giving people tickets, you know, and you're talking about people not conforming to do what they should be doing at games and match of football, but it was just disappointing that she went off and, you know, tell us to do made a jumper for the duration of the match.
The GAA can't put on tickets, no umbrellas, no fold-away seats or fold-out seats, no alcohol, no knitting.
I don't know, it's disappointing, isn't it? But, you know, you hit an artist.
Who was playing?
It was Dublin semi-final. I can't remember, it was 2 years back, year before last.
Maybe she was knitting a jumper for the Dublin team. Boom, boom.
I don't think so.
They need a jumper up forward. Anyway, they don't. God, they'll romp home again this year. But by the way, was it the clackety-clack and the clickety-click of the knitting needles that annoyed you, Paul? I was just, you're saying, waste of a ticket.
People are struggling to get tickets and, you know, tickets gone into the wrong hands. But you hit a sorry Chris at Ingham and I feel forced for him because the event was a ticket event and somebody goes along and, you know... you know, and doesn't give them some respect, but it's equally annoying when, you know, people get tickets for games and they just don't want to be there.
Okay.
And I think it's going to be, you know, going to be a feature of games going forward.
Okay. Anything else that annoys you, apart from knitting in Croke Park?
No, not at all, Joe. Not at all.
In the same light,
I seen a concert many years ago with see Gary Moore in Dublin, and he actually stopped the show mid-show. To get a couple of people removed from the shop for heckling. So,
Gary Moore, the guitarist.
Brilliant
guitarist.
It is. About 10, 12 years ago.
Okay.
But it's a feature event then, and it does happen. And,
It's
in the small intimate venues. It's probably.
Did anyone say anything to the knitter?
A couple of people did, yeah. I didn't. She was sitting in front of me, two seats in front of me. But
what?
You could see people were a bit irked. But hopefully this year she might give me her tickets if I see it again.
Yeah, well, you're going to be there in September anyway.
You will be.
Okay, Paul Gurry, Mina Mahogat, Frank.
Hello, have a good day. Hello.
You too. Frank is in Finglas. Frank, good afternoon.
Joe, how are you?
I'm none the better reading your text. It says, Joe, it's called the Garth Brooks syndrome. The Irish have it in spades. When Garth Brooks was here, half the people hadn't heard of him. It was just a cool thing to do. People just do it. The Irish are like sheep. It's like... The last line has me baffled. This is a Beckettian line, something to Samuel Beckett. It's like the Prosecco. What does that mean,
friend? That's what it is, Joe. It's the cool thing to be doing. I'd say half of them that was at Christie's show last night. And by the way, Christie is a gentleman.
A genius and a gentleman.
A great, great performer, great storyteller. But I'd say half of them there last night, Joe, probably didn't know Christie Deignan. But it was the cool thing to do. Someone probably says 2 weeks going in office, I'm going to see Christie Deignan.
Yeah.
And the little heads like little meerkats popped up and said, I'll go to that. That's what the Irish are like, Joe. They're like sheep. Garth Brooks could have only done one or two gigs. The real fans would have been happy. But then you had all the bandwagons. Yeah, I'd have a bit of that.
Yeah, but Frank, the bandwagoners were willing to pay their 60 quid or whatever for...
But it's called respect. And I tell you, Joe, what I'd love to say. I think when people are at these events and they see absolute fools like that, heckling, yeah, or not paying attention, turn around the whole crowd and belittle them. Make them feel an inch small.
And what should belittle them. What should she say to them? Like, what should
a good comedian, Joe, be able to rip them
apart. I know, they rip them apart, yeah.
Like, look at your ears or something, look at the nose on you. Stuff like that, you look like Shrek.
Now, would you bring me to, it's like the Prosecco line.
Ah, the Prosecco, Joe, was brilliant. Do you remember a couple of years ago the Prosecco was all the buzz?
See, it's still, isn't it?
No, well, some girl was sitting somewhere watching Sex and the City or something, Joe, when she heard the Prosecco.
Yeah.
And then she starts drinking it. Then you get all the other girls going, oh, I fancy a Prosecco. You didn't even know what it was. The gin now was the thing.
The gin?
Some girl or some bloke says someone's drinking a pink gin. Do you all want it?
Oh, the gin. I thought you said the gin. The gin is the new Prosecco.
Yeah. Because it's pink and someone goes, oh, look at that. She has that. I'll have a bit of this.
And what? Can you predict what it's going to be next year? The Aperol, I predict. You know, the Aperol. That sweet, sickly stuff.
Yeah. But that's the Irish show. We're a nation of sheep. We just follow.
Well, you said a few minutes ago we're a nation of meerkats.
That's not. But what about when someone's in the office and they go, I'm going to see Garth Brooks, you know? They all pop up their head like, I'll go to that. It's like a meeting. Do you ever love going to a meeting? They go to a meeting to open a stamp, Joe, an envelope, to put a stamp on it. They're brilliant. So I wouldn't say Christy now was taking it too personally, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, he shouldn't. He's a brilliant...
No,
brilliant.
He won't.
Okay. No, he won't. Who's your favourite yourself? This is Crazy World. Introducer Frank.
This is the legend that is Christy Deignan. The man. There'll always only be one Christy. All right, Joe.
Nice one, bro.
Have to go. Take it easy.
To Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Eric Cross, the Taylor and Anstey, a most wonderful, wonderful book. Tom Cronin, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
And it was turned into a magnificent stage performance, wasn't it?
It was. It was fabulous to this sad occasion in history. But I was at a show some years ago, especially 5 or 6 years ago, and... Yeah. Sad part of the story about the tailor knelt down towards, to say the rosary.
Yeah.
And he was on his own in the stage. And he started off, Hail Mary, full of grace. And there was a few old ladies in the front of the audience. And they started, Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners.
They started responding.
And they kept it up. And it kind of they ruined the show one way, but not as... That's funny and a very serious show.
So the tailor, it's based on a true story, husband and wife who were, did he write a story or tell a story? That
he was living in near Gogonborough, and his wife was Anastasia, and he collected all these stories, but this writer, Eric Cross, used to call to host him, and he taught him the stories, but some were fairly...
Right, and I think a few of them were about animals and mating, and they were all in total innocence, by the way.
Yes, yes.
But he was berated, wasn't he, in the Shannon and was that the 1930s Ireland or whatever? God.
His book was burnt by the priests and the locals and his neighbours were Daniel had to avoid him because they were afraid for the priests to do it. No?
Crazy. Anyway, so the play was not. It's a 1942 book, and the play. I think it was Anna Manahan and the wonderful Des Keogh. Who played the two of them? I could be wrong. And I'll find out. But it was a brilliant performance. And by the way, did the women take out their beads?
No, I didn't think they had a chance to do that.
Okay, but they.
You know, like where I was now. I know I've actually gone through winters on in Gogan Barra, but it didn't happen there. Yeah. But you know, the women were only about maybe 10 feet from the stage. It was a rural hall, but it was an excellent show. But you know, it was very funny in the midst of a very sad part of the play.
That was priceless, as you say.
Priceless.
Yeah. Well, do you remember hearing the story? I think it was down in Kerry, of a play on in the school hall, and then the set was a living room and one door Maria went into the kitchen, and the other door Maria went into the toilet.
Yes.
And in the middle of the second act, someone who wanted to go to the loo walked up across the stage and opened the door into the bathroom. It wasn't the bathroom, of course. It was in the props at the back of the stage. But anyway, that was priceless. Well, OK, Tom, well done. And remind the people, listen to Taylor and Anstey by Eric Cross. It's still in many of our wonderful public libraries. Get it out. It's a magnificent read. And when you're finished, take a minute to remember those two wonderful people, the Taylor and his wife Anastasia, and what they went through. Tom, thanks indeed for reminding us of that. Tom Cronin. Geraldine Kelch. Geraldine, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. I'm just going back to the original caller talking about Christy last night on the Aslan gig.
Yeah.
And I just saying to your researcher there, you know, Joe, I'm nearly 60 and I'm going to a lot of gigs now since I was 16. From Brendan Grace in the Drake Inn to Christy originally in Janelle's shopping centre when he got back with Aslan. Now, Christy's a tough cookie. He'd be well able now to handle anything like that.
Yeah.
But it's the disrespect, Joe. I said there, if I find a lot of young girls go to these gigs, and some of them weren't even born when these guys were actually...
Okay, well, give me a for instance. Give me a for example.
Well, I was at Damien Dempsey there at Christmas time, and, like, you know, Damien has a great following, a bit like Christy, and he tells a few stories.
Damien has it's bordering on a religious following at this stage. People absolutely love him.
Yeah.
Adore him.
You know the way they say there's no show like a Joe show? Well, there's no show like a Damien Dempsey gig. And I really mean that.
Brilliant.
You have to see him live.
Absolutely.
But anyway, a few guys came in and one of them was drunk and Damien was just starting to talk and he only had sang one song and your man shouted up, shut effing up. And of course, loyal Damien fans around turned on them and told them they'd beat him up if they didn't shut up. And it wasn't a peep out of him for the rest of the day.
Okay.
But the same thing at Damien Dempsey gigs. You know, I find a lot more younger girls, there's nothing wrong with younger girls going. But they're there and they're talking and they're shouting and they're on their phones and they're taking selfies. And it's all a show to show, I'm tough or something like that. Or look at me, I'm out and about at an Aslan gig or a Christy Dignam gig or a Damien Dempsey gig. And I just find more and more with the mobile phones, that's what's ruining a lot of the culture in the shows.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would agree with you. And maybe the alcohol as well. I don't know whether it's alcohol at Damien's gigs. But maybe, I know Christy Moore is strict, isn't he, on the drink at the gigs?
Yeah, well, I did see Christy once in the pint and an American guy kept shouting down at him and Christy put him in his place pretty quick.
And why did the American, he came all the way from America to go up to the pint to shout at Christy Moore?
he was shouting. No, he wasn't abusing him. He wasn't abusing him fair. He was just shouting, Christy, sing this and sing that and whatever.
Right, okay. He's trying to produce.
And Christy just put him in his place.
He's trying to produce the show,
Yeah.
Okay, Geraldine, go to Margaret. Geraldine's
the
fingers.
Thanks.
Mary, lots of love there for Christy. Digging them everywhere. Mary Phelan, Mary Fleetwood Mac, 10 years ago, the O2, the Pint Depot was
10 years ago, and things haven't changed. It was like being in a beehive, Joe. You've this marvellous band playing. The tickets were €106 each. I had treated my friend to it. We two lads next to us who wouldn't stop talking when we asked them nicely, when we got cross with them, left early, in and out to the loo, in and out for drink, and literally, even as Lindsay Buckingham was thanking the audience at the end, you could see all the people just up and down and up and down. And you even had those people delivering drink to you, but they were still in and out to the loo.
And a much, you remember, how much were the tickets for Fleetwood Mac?
€106, and that was 10 years ago.
And people paid €106 to drink.
To go in and talk to each other and drink. And then when there's the best song on, that's the only one they know. And it's the same with Bruce Springsteen.
You can go your
Born
own way,
in the USA.
Yeah.
They're all up for Born in the USA.
Yeah.
But they come in late. He starts on time. He doesn't have a sport act. They come into the RDS late because they're too busy outside drinking. So I've been to see him in Barcelona and in Paris because I won't go to Bruce Springsteen in Ireland anymore because it's just annoying. The disrespect and the lack of respect to the people at it as well who've paid money.
Yeah, but
and Paris and Barcelona, totally different.
Okay, you won't go to see Bruce Springsteen in Ireland because
anymore.
Of the audience. But
because
all
the audience.
But all the performers, almost Paul Simon, Bruce Springsteen, do the list.
Yeah.
They all say Leonard Cohen loved this country. Loved it. Had an incredible relationship. But they all say they love the Irish audiences.
Exactly. And I don't know, maybe it's just some gigs or it's like the Fleetwood Mac one was an aberration 10 years ago and the Bruce ones. Maybe other ones like Leonard get a different reaction, but it was appalling and totally different than abroad seeing them.
Okay.
Just very respectful audiences.
Okay, Tom, so thanks.
Maybe they'll listen and change.
Well, they listen tomorrow because the RTÉ Concert Orchestra is performing the music of Leonard Cohen at the All Together Now Festival at 3 o'clock.
Fantastic.
We're talking about Leonard Cohen we're recording it actually in the RTÉ tent at 1:30 tomorrow with John McKenna, personal friend. Okay, that's tomorrow. I hope people will stay quiet, but anyway, I'm well used to it at this stage. Mary, feeling good to meet a Maga, Tommy O'Sullivan, South Laurie Davis at BCO, Rachel Breslin. Happy birthday, Rachel. Was the researcher, Fergus Sweeney produced, and Catherine Thomas is next.